You're listening to UK Health Radio, where health means more than the absence of illness. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. I'm Hillary Burns, and each week we explore honest conversations about life, health, and whole person well-being through real stories of resilience, healing, and human connection. This is the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, and today we have a very special guest. We have Eileen Kopsaftis. She is a movement educator, a nutrition educator, and is certified in applied functional science. Welcome to the studio, Eileen.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Hillary.
You're welcome. So we just had some technical difficulties, but now we're going. So Yes. So let's see, where, I like to go back, where were you born? I know you had some stuff you were going to talk about with your growing up, but where were you born and how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I was born in Connecticut. So you could call me a true Yankee, I guess.
Where? That's where I am.
Oh, in Waterbury?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm in Westport.
Okay. And well, I think we left before I was even 3 months old. So
I don't remember much. Yeah.
I lived all over the country, moved like 30 something times between the time I was born and the time I graduated high school. So
whoa.
Was an interesting
child. Your father in the service or?
No, a lot of people ask that.
Yeah.
He was a contractor. He was always looking for work. You know, the grass was always greener someplace else. So
30 times. That's like, at least like twice a year or something?
Yeah. Well, ninth grade was New York State, Arizona, and Florida. So.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
I grew up with two older brothers. Yes.
And when you say it that way, are they not around?
No. They both died in their 40s.
Oh.
Yeah. So. Yeah. One to cancer, one to heart disease, although that was kind of inconclusive. He just didn't wake up. And I guess the autopsy was inconclusive. So
sorry. Okay. So you all moved, right?
Yes.
So you all moved. Okay. Wow. So what was that like? I guess it was hard to make friends.
Yeah, I was a very shy kid, so it wasn't easy. And my love for reading is, I think, what saved me. It was like my saving grace. I could bury myself in a book and just join a whole nother world. Reading just uses your imagination and puts you other places. And so reading was my saving grace. I still remember my father's father lived on a farm, and they had a big old farmhouse. And upstairs in the attic, there were a bunch of books. And this was the attic where you had to like pull the ladder down and climb up the ladder to go into it. Now, you would think as a little girl that would scare me, but there were a lot of windows. So there was light. It wasn't dark. And I went up there because the books, it was like a magnet. And I remember reading Lord of the Rings. It was the first time I picked up a Bible and looked at that. I mean, there were so many amazing books up there. I spent hours up there whenever I could.
So were they fiction? Were they?
Most of them were. Yeah. Oh. Which is funny. As an adult, I tend to only read nonfiction. But yeah.
Oh, cool. Nice. I know.
Unless I'm at the beach, and then I'll read fiction when I'm at the beach.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of people who were saved by books, which I think is really, I love books. So
yeah, it's a whole another world.
Yeah. You just jump into someone else's life.
Yeah. For a little while. And the characters and the storylines.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So from Waterbury to everywhere, there was no place you really settled, right? Your father just.
No, we tended to be in upstate New York more than any other place, but we'd bounce back and forth. Okay. So
what kind of contractor was he?
Oh, he did everything. Plumbing, masonry. Yeah.
Okay. And so, okay, so we had talked before we started about how you led, I don't know if you still do, a support group for people who were abused.
Yes, it's called Choose Freedom.
Okay.
It's run under Cameo Ministries. A dear friend of mine and I started it back in 1999.
Wow.
And we, you know, every Monday night, we have a meeting. And currently I'm teaching other women to learn how to lead the group now, because obviously these women who've, you know, experienced abuse of any kind are very fragile, very delicate, and you need to be sure that you don't make mistakes that will cause harm. So we've learned over the quarter of a century plus, mm-hmm. We have a workbook. We work on things like anger, fear, forgiveness. And it's life-changing. I've seen so many women healed by God that it's phenomenal. Like women who hated their bodies, you know, no longer hated looking in the mirror. Women who hated men, happily married with children.
Wow.
Yeah. Seen a lot of amazing success. And some of their stories would keep you awake at night, but it's been an honor and a privilege to be able to be part of that group and to watch them heal. It's been a great blessing in my life.
And you had abuse in your childhood, right? That's
yes. And here's the funny part. So my dear friend, who had always had a vision to start this group, and when we met, I felt like, okay, I think I'm supposed to help you start this group. And the interesting part is I said, well, I don't really have a history of abuse, so I won't be able to relate to these women. And she said, well, it doesn't really matter. You just need a heart for the women. Okay. And then the very first time we have what we call story night, where the women share their stories. And I realized, wait a minute. I was like sexually abused for 9 years, but because I wasn't like threatened physically or forced. I mean, it started at the age of 4. And it was just this dirty little secret. And I never, it's so weird. It was almost like my brain, I mean, I didn't forget my past. It's not like I had amnesia, but I didn't think of the fact that I had actually experienced abuse.
And was it a family member?
Yes, 2 family members. Yes.
4 years old. Wow. So you just, it was just a thing, right?
Yeah. It was just something that happened. So, but what I can, and then of course there was a lot of violence in my household. There was a lot of rage, lack of control of anger, those kind of things. But the interesting part is that I joke in the group, and I don't want to say joke, but I make this comment because obviously none of this is a joking matter, right. But I make this comment and I say, I'm actually thankful for my past, because it's what caused me to be who I am. And if I had had some perfect life, I'd be some empty-headed little twit who couldn't help anybody. So I see my past as a positive, because it's enabled me to help so many other people get out of that life of the having triggers to things. Like, you know, it's an abnormal response to something, and it's because of the past. And so, like my dear friend who started the group, she also experienced a great deal of abuse. Her father sold her to other men, and you know, there was satanic ritual abuse and all kinds of things that went on. She actually wrote a book about it, that she was healed. But wow. Here's the thing. She was triggered. She would go by a wrought iron fence every day on her way to work, and she'd get triggered by that. And what I mean by triggered is start to kind of have a panic attack. And then she realized it's because there was a wrought iron fence around the house that her father used to bring her to. So there may be people listening to this right now who get triggered by things and they have no idea why. And usually it's because your body thinks you're in the same danger you were in when it happened, because of that memory of whatever, You know, it could be a color. It could be a cologne. It could be a sound.
Mm.
So we had one woman who was triggered by laughter. And we think that her abuser must have laughed a lot. So those triggers, you can be healed.
Yeah.
You can learn. We call it a plastic spider. It's like once you're healed from that past trauma, the memory is still there. It doesn't go anywhere, but it no longer triggers the emotional response. Like I could sit here and I'm not going to, but I could sit here and tell you every single detail of everything that ever happened to me. And I will have no emotional thought about it whatsoever. And it's not like I'm numb. I haven't turned my emotions off because that doesn't work either. Because right. You can't only turn off one emotion. When you turn off emotions, you turn them all off.
Mm.
You know, you can't just turn off fear, or you're going to turn off love. You're going to turn off compassion and you're going to turn off everything. You're just going to be numb. So,
and now I think we could take our commercial break. And then when we come back, we'll get the rest of the story. All right.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
All right. When you said you were going to help her start it, you had no idea that you had been abused.
No, I didn't even think of
it. But something.
I know. And you should have seen the look on her face. Right? When we did that first meeting where we started sharing our stories, you should have seen the look on her face. She was like, as I'm telling my story.
You had no idea you had a story, right?
And it was toward the end of the night. We finished up around 8:30. It was quarter after 8. And she had said, well, I think maybe we'll wait until the next time. And I said, oh, no, I'm going next. I can't wait till next week. There was no way I was going to have the courage if I had to wait a whole week. And but the cool thing about sharing, it's not about dredging up the past and making you all upset again.
Mm-hmm.
It's about sharing what happened in a space that's safe,
mm-hmm.
with no judgment and only love. And when you do that and you look at all of the women, when you're done sharing and everyone looks at you the same as they did before you share it, they don't see you as a different person,
mm-hmm.
because you're not your past. You're not your trauma. So, yeah.
And I also think by sharing, but when you're not sharing and it's just in you, there's a lot of shame.
Yes.
When you can share it out loud.
Yes.
That disappears, especially when you see, oh, I'm not really different than those other people. They have the same thing.
Yes. I love that you said that, Hillary, because that's the first thing that God healed me from was shame. I no longer felt shame about my past.
But you didn't even know it was there.
I know.
Well, you still had shame. Wow. Well, the other thing, I think it also separates us when we're not sharing, when we just keep it in. Like, I feel different. Like, well, I can't tell anyone because they're not going to love me anymore or something. And so then I just take myself away. But when I can share, and like you're saying, it was a safe place. There was love, no judgment.
Yes.
All of a sudden you return to community and connection, right? It's really a gift what you did. So
yes, yes, absolutely. And of course, you don't just go out and, you know, stand on a rooftop and tell anybody who walks by.
Right.
You have to be discerning in who you share. But we had a lot of women who've gone through the course and they said, I can't believe how many women now that I talk to who just start opening up to me about their past. And then, of course, they tell them about the group so that they can.
Oh.
But they're shocked at how many. It's kind of like, because they've gone through this, it's almost like it attracts other women to them on like a spiritual level. And they just start like sharing and opening up, and they talk about it. And yeah, it's very cool.
That's amazing. Like, they're not even talking about it. They just, wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, when you, did you go to school for this? Like social whatever?
Or no.
Psychology? No. Okay. So where did you go? You had this abuse, but you didn't know it was, you know, I had stuff that I didn't know. I didn't think it was abuse. It was just like,
you know, life.
I used to,
I worked. You mean this doesn't happen to everybody? Yeah.
I worked at a movie theater, and the guy who was the manager, he used to threaten to lock, to do sexual things and threaten me. You know, he would lock me in the office and I would say, no, I will scream. And there was a whole movie theater full of people. So he never actually did it. Mm. And I would say, oh, that was just him, blah, blah, blah. And people were like, no,
that's
not okay.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny. Like, oh, yeah, that's Mr. Hind. You know, like, you know, you just don't know. It's just life until you do know. Yeah.
Right.
I was just, yeah, that's him. Thank God I had the presence of mind to say I will scream.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't that alone. So
it would have been different. Yeah.
Yeah. Woof. Anyway. Woof. Okay. All right. Now, so what did you go to school for?
When I was 30, I was a single mom at the time. And
wait, go back. When did you have your or did you get
married? I got married at 18.
Married at
18. I had my son at 19 and my daughter just before I turned 21.
Okay.
And then I ended up being a single mom about a year later.
Did he leave or you kicked
him? Well, he had issues, drinking and anger. And so I was able to get him to leave.
Hmm.
So, and then he kind of disappeared because he didn't want to pay any child support. And so, and it was funny because I remember going to the courthouse and saying, because, you know, there was all this thing about absentee fathers and you could get support. And they said, well, we can't do anything unless you have his address. And I said, well, if I had his address, I'd be knocking on his door, not yours.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know. But anyhow, so I was a single mom. I worked two jobs, sometimes three jobs. And by the time I turned 30, I realized I needed to go back to school. My kids were now old enough where they could be in a room alone and I didn't have to worry about them hurting themselves, right?
So what kind of jobs did you work and how, what, and...
Oh, I was mainly in the food industry, so working in restaurants,
okay,
waitressing, tending bar, hostessing. Those
and who watched the kids?
My mom.
Your mom. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Now I did have times where I had babysitters, but that was always a nightmare because for some reason you just couldn't trust the babysitters to not have a party when you were at work.
Oh God!
And you know, or invite guys in, or you know, the babysitter would show up looking like Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, and then. By the third time she showed up, she looked like she should be working on 42nd Street. And you're like, what happened to that sweet little girl that I hired? You know?
Wow.
So yeah, I had a lot of issues with babysitters. So my mom was my saving grace. She was able to help a lot. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. So back to now you're 30. Mm-hmm. Your kids are 11.
Oh my gosh. They were
11 and 9. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I decided that I wanted to go for nutrition. And I went to the local college to see if I could financially handle it, right? See what was available for loans and whatever. And the financial person spent like a half hour with me. They were very helpful. We went over everything. And they said, oh, we can. And this was the local community college. And they said, oh, we can cover all your costs. You're eligible, you know, because you're a single parent and all of this, you'll get TAP grants and Pell grants and all these grants. And, you know, you won't even need a loan. I'm like, okay, great. And then they asked me what I wanted it for. And I said, nutrition. And they're like, oh, we don't have that here. that's only at like the ag and tech colleges, and they're like a distance from here. And I'm like, I felt so deflated. But you know, Hillary, I think because of my past, it made me very resilient.
Yeah.
And whenever I felt like deflated, like somebody just popped my balloon, I would always reinflate it and go, there's another answer. There's another way. I would only allow me to be without air for about a minute. So I got in my car, I headed back to my house, which was 5 minutes from this college. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's like five other colleges 30 minutes from me or less. One of them's got to teach nutrition. And so I went home and I got the phone book, right? Because nobody knows what that is now. I got the phone book out and I just started calling the colleges. And there was a college that was literally 5 minutes from me that had a complete degree in nutrition.
Wow.
So they sent me the book. I realized I disagreed with everything they were teaching and I'd probably be failed by the professor because it doesn't usually work in college. And they had a section on physical therapy. And I'm like, I've always been so fascinated by the human body. So I decided, okay, I'll do the physical therapy. So I called them to ask them questions about it. And it was like they were trying to talk me out of it, which I found very interesting because you would think colleges would want people to enroll, right?
Yeah.
So they, oh, it's a very challenging program. Oh, it's, you know, it's like pre-med. It's really, you know. And every time they did that, I'm kind of like a bull that sees the red cape when you say challenge. I'm going to prove I can do it. And so I think it just encouraged me even more. And then I figured out a way because this was a very expensive college. And at that time, it was a 4-year degree. Now they've got it 6 or 7 years because it's a doctorate. But at that time, it was 4 years. And I was able to finagle where I did the first 2 years at the local community college at like 1/10 the cost.
Where they had the grants.
Yes. Yeah. So my first 2 years were completely covered. And I worked my butt off. And I'm not saying this out of pride because I spent so much time in the Learning Assistance Center where they had free tutors. Ooh. I could have moved my bed there. So, you know, I made sure my homework was right because that got graded. I made sure I used all the tutors that I could get, but I kept a 4.0 for 73 credits because I knew I wouldn't be able to transfer into the 4-year school because they had like 200 applicants to transfer in.
Oh.
And if you weren't at the top of the list, you weren't even looked at. So because of that, I got a $5,000 a year scholarship from the college I transferred into. They called it a scholarship of excellence or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a total of 10 grand for my last 2 years. And I think I only ended up needing to take a loan out because the books were $600 a semester. So I only had to take a loan out for the books. So I graduated with a bachelor's degree for $2,400.
Wow.
So it's all about timing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when I went to take the licensure exam, they only offered it once a year back then. And it was given at the same time in every state. And when I called to apply for it for New York State, I was told that I missed the deadline. I'm like, what do you mean I missed the deadline? I guess they had a 60-day thing. And I didn't know that. So I'm like, oh, once again, you know, my balloon got popped, but I didn't stay that way. And I'm like, wait a minute. I can take the test in any state. I don't have to take it here.
Oh.
And so I called New Hampshire. I called Vermont. I called Massachusetts because I'm within driving distance of all these states. Yeah. And I met the requirements for New Hampshire. And so my husband took me to New Hampshire. I took the exam and we went out for lobster after.
Wait, was this a new husband?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. We were engaged at the time.
Oh.
Yeah. We got married after I graduated.
Did you have more kids with him?
I need to graduate and get my license.
Did you have more kids with him?
Yes. I have two younger daughters.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Cool. Okay. So you did that. Now, meanwhile, you had started that other group. Was that group going all this time?
Oh, that group was going, since 1999. So that was, I graduated in 1994. So you're right. Yeah, that didn't happen until after I graduated. Okay. I never looked at the timeline as much as you're asking me. So you're making me think here if you see smoke.
Yeah, I like chronology for some reason. I like to know the order of things. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, no, I graduated in 1994.
Yes. Okay. So, but you were like 34 or something, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So your other kids were 15 and 13 at that point, right?
I trust you. You're doing
okay.
The math.
Yeah. I do the math. Okay. All right. So they were doing okay, obviously. All right. Mm-hmm. So you did that. You did the PT. You got married. You had two more kids.
Not for a while. I was married for 5 years before we decided to have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so you were 39 when you had them.
Just before I turned 41, because it was 1999 that I had my first daughter with him. And then 2003 when I had my second daughter, and I was 44 then.
Wow.
Yeah. I was very healthy.
So, all right. So you had studied physical therapy. Then when did you start studying? Oh, wait. So you didn't even start the group. You started the group after you had your third kid, right?
When Sarah was a baby. She was born in 1999. We started Cameo when she was a baby.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about your other stuff. So.
Yes.
So you did the physical therapy and then you finally did the nutrition. Where's my notes? Are on another page. Nutrition and the other one, the applied.
The applied functional science. Now, those are things that took years.
Okay.
Because I was doing them very part-time because I was working. I was also starting my own business.
Physical therapy?
No, teaching people movement and things. I would teach classes at the local community college. I did that for 15 years. As a matter of fact, I just did my last semester and I told them that I won't be submitting more. I just feel like I need to change things up a little bit. But I love to teach people how to move and train their body in a way that eliminates chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just exercise, you know. There is a way to resolve pain in your body if there are body parts that aren't working properly. You just need to know to figure out which ones they are, because a lot of the times it's the part that's not where the pain is.
Right.
And the example is, you know, if somebody's got knee pain, it's almost never the knee. Now, obviously, it could be bone on bone. There could be structural issues. But 90% of the time, it's because they had an old ankle issue that never got resolved and the ankle's not working right. So the knee is getting trashed, or their hip isn't functioning right and they don't even know it because there's no symptoms there, but the knee gets trashed. So a lot of the times, the reason people can't eliminate chronic pain is because they're chasing the symptom and they're not finding the cause.
And how did you... You know, you studied physical therapy. How did you get into movement? Like, how did you know this? Because there's plenty of physical therapists who do not talk that way.
Oh, I know. So the first 15 years of my profession, I was extremely passionate, like a dog with a bone, to learn as much as I could about manual work. So I got skilled in pretty much everything there is: myofascial release, cranial sacral therapy, Mulligan's mobilization with movement, McKenzie's, protocol. I mean, you name it, I was trained in it. Strain and counter strain.
Where did you go to learn that stuff?
Oh my gosh, I spent so much money after I graduated, especially the first 5 years after I graduated. They were all continuing ed courses, and if it was within driving distance, I went to it. And it was very
expensive. Loved it. You like, it's your passion. You
absolutely
love it.
And the more I learned, the more I could help people.
Yeah. Wow.
So that was my first 15 years. And then I was introduced to this way of training the body that the Gray Institute teaches, G-R-A-Y. And they don't teach the public. They only teach movement professionals like PTs or athletic trainers or whatever. So when I realized how well this worked for my patients in the clinic setting, I started teaching it in classes at the local college, the community classes. and saw that I could help a whole bunch of people at the same time. Because when you're doing manual work, you're only helping one person at a time.
Yeah.
And how many people can you help? But if you can start teaching a lot of people at once, you can help a lot more people. So I got very excited about this. I created an online program where I teach this in depth. I don't work for the Gray Institute. It's not a program by them. I have to make sure I say that. But it's what I've learned from them. I've taken their advanced coursework. Actually, I've completed their fellowship in applied functional science, which is 40 weeks. It's like 250 hours. And it will make your head hurt because it's like a PhD in human biomechanics. But I can watch somebody do six different movements and I can figure out where the problem is, no matter where they experience their pain. And then I can show them how to do movements to work to resolve it. And it's very effective. I cannot tell you how many people have been helped by this training who have been able to resolve pain, get their life back. You know, does it help 100%? No, of the people. But I don't know anything out there that helps 100% of the people. Yeah. But it's pretty effective. I would say 90-something percent of the people who do the trainings see success, at least of some point, no matter what's going on with them. You know, really, obviously, it depends on the person. Every person's like a fingerprint. You know, we all have a different history. We all have different medical issues. We all have different lifestyles. And so it will depend on what's going on in their world and how much they're able to do. But the whole point of it is when you're doing the movements, the goal is to do movements that make your brain happy, not that make your brain think that it's got to protect you from you because the repetitions hurt. So there's no potential harm, only potential benefit. You use all the modifications necessary to perform the motions free of pain, completely stable and safe, and you see progress.
All right. Hold that thought. I'm going to write this down. See progress. We have to go to our commercial break.
Okay.
And then we're going to tell them how to find you and all that good stuff and some stories. Okay. All right. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsors. And now we'll return to Eileen so you can find out how to find her.
Mm-hmm. So I have a main website that has a 5-question quiz that takes less than 2 minutes to answer. And it will provide for them a page of all the resources I provide for their specific concern.
Okay.
So it will help aim them at what they need, like if their concern is incontinence or balance issues or weakness or whatever.
So what's the website?
The website is havelifelongwellbeing.com.
Okay.
I know it's a long handle. have lifelong
well-being. Okay. No, no dashes or anything.
Nope. Nope. Okay. And they can also access my books on there. You know, I've got books that I've written, and any live courses, virtual courses, anything else is on that website that they can find out about. Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. That's good to know. Okay. So that's the main place. And then, so you were saying incontinence, you were saying, so more than just knees and backs, right?
Oh yeah. 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 So movement can improve a lot of things, and incontinence is one of them because the pelvic floor gets weak. And, you know, Kegel, if it worked, we wouldn't see all those aisles of disposable underwear everywhere we go. Right. So there's more to it than that. Yes.
Okay. You know, my mom, she was a tennis player and everything. She had a little episode where she, I don't know, something disconnected and she fell down. And so now she had two caregivers and they didn't let her walk. You know, like they had to hold her. She got so much weaker, and she just,
oh my goodness,
she just passed away a month ago. Yes. Yeah, so yeah, a year from that.
I'm sorry for your loss. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. She, cause she had been an athlete all her life, and we're like, come on, mom, you can get up. But she just got so weak. I mean, she was 96. So, but still, you know, I mean, you're preventing falls, but you're also weakening her. So it's kind of like,
yeah, you're promoting decline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have told people that, you know, the only way to prevent a fall is to keep somebody in bed. They can even fall if they're in a wheelchair. In the nursing home setting, there were a lot of patients who would reach over to get something off the floor and fall out of their wheelchair. So, you know, walkers don't prevent falls. People think they do. They don't. They're there for support if you're weak, but they won't prevent you from falling. Same with a cane.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a whole chapter on that in my book on aging culprits. I talk about assistive devices and.
Right. And is that pain culprits?
Or that's in my book, Aging Culprits. Yeah. I have one book on pain and one on aging.
Okay. Yes. So pain culprit, and they can find those on your website, pain culprits and aging culprits. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like a
I don't actually sell them from my website, but they're, they are on there and they can buy them at Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it shows people what to do. Now, they can also go to your website after they do the quiz, the 5-question quiz, is that they'll get free exercises to start with?
Well, I mean, I have my YouTube channel that has tons of exercises on it. So what they're going to get is a page that will give them all the resources that I have, whether they're free or whether they require purchasing. They'll see everything that's available for the topic that concerns them the most. And so if it's pain, it's going to bring them to the Move Without Pain private club.
Okay.
There is the free membership to get them started. And then if they see that that works and that that would really benefit them, then they can join the paid level. Yeah.
Okay. And what is your YouTube channel called?
It's just my name, which I know is, you know, Eileen Kopsaftis. Who's gonna know how to spell that? But
K-O-P-S. F as in Frank, T as in Tom, I S, and we'll have it on the show so they can see it.
Okay.
And then we'll also have lifelongwellbeing.com underneath your name so they can also see that. Okay.
Yeah. And I've got lots of playlists on my YouTube channel. So like if their concern is plantar fasciitis or some other thing, they can. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Great. Now in our last couple of minutes, what would you like to leave people with? What's your vision? If you could have what you wanted in the next 5 years, what would it look like?
Yeah. Well, my passion in life is to erase pain from the world. I would love to be able to have to change careers because nobody was in pain. That would make me ecstatically happy. I don't see that happening, but that's what I would really love. But my goal is to reach as many people as possible. I don't really focus on growing my YouTube channel, but I do know, you know, it's been kind of organically sort of increasing. I do know the more subscribers, the more people it will reach because YouTube will promote it. I know there's all these algorithms and all this other stuff. I don't really have the time or the inclination to do any of that. But I do a lot of online events that are free. I'll have anywhere from 400 to 800 people attend them.
Wow. And but how do they find out about those on your...
I have a monthly newsletter that they can sign up for if they go on that website. Okay. And that always announces whenever anything comes out.
Oh, great.
But my biggest passion really is to be able to help as many people as possible, to have, you know, anybody who hears this message to share it with other people. You know, everybody here who's hearing this, I'm sure, either experiences pain in their own body or they know somebody who does.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times they can become free of pain and it's not that difficult. But they need to know the right things to do and how to do them. And that's it. It, the amount of human misery in the world, it would keep me up at night if I didn't use lavender oil.
Wow.
And if I didn't pray, you know, for peace. But yeah, that's really, I just want everybody to know you're a whole body. You're not a body part. Everything is connected. Don't let people see you as a body part.
Mm.
And if something's not helping you after 3-4 times, it's probably not going to. So there are so many people out there that have spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars trying to get out of pain. And there's so many programs out there that are just absolutely useless.
Mm.
So you need to find somebody who sees you as a whole person and listens to you, hears you, and works with you in the ways that you need.
Mm. Thank you, Eileen.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. You know, people don't know about this. So spread the word, everybody. Yes, spread the word. Yes,
please.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you for the work you do and for your commitment to people. We appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, take a moment to reflect, share, or simply be with what you heard. Until next time, this is Hillary Burns, inviting you to stay curious, stay connected, and keep getting real.